Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Ireland gets its first Krispy Kreme to more fanfare than they can deal with. And the CEO at American Airlines. You sound like Homer Simpson. The CEO at American Airlines argues seats with less legroom are actually more comfortable. Perhaps I should repeat that just to make sure that you understand what I said. The CEO at American Airlines argues that seats with less legroom are actually more comfortable. And an update on the Marriott strike situation around the country.
Yeah, of course they're more comfortable.
Yes, absolutely.
One of our goals here on the Travel Guys is to make you smarter travelers. So one way to do that is to improve your travel literacy so that you can avoid problems on the road. So at 3:20, Chris Elliott joins us to share some of the ways that you can improve your travel literacy.
There is a fungus among us. I just love saying that. It's also a way to introduce our guest at 3:35. Travis Scott is the executive director at Visit Mendocino County, and he's stopping by to talk about a mushroom festival. Shrooms for all, from another time and another place.
You know, more people are hitting the road on vacation, long trips, short trips, and if you're going to travel in one of those newfangled automobile contraptions, you should know some important tips on avoiding and getting out of trouble. Now, of course, this list is from 1914.
Ah.
Tips for traveling the Lincoln Highway 100 years ago, coming up at 3:50.
It's Sunday. The clock says just past 3 o'clock. Must be time for the latest updates and general craziness from the Travel Guys.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Thank you so much for joining us. We're brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. It's a blustery Sunday afternoon. Boy, I'll tell you, Mark, I don't know about you, but it's sure feeling a lot like fall. Got leaves and stuff blowing everywhere.
It is. It is. It is a very fall-like day. I have just come home from someplace that I almost said where it is that I came home from.
Mm-hmm.
But as I told you before we went on the air, don't ask me where I've been this week because I've been out checking out a couple of the mystery tours that Sports Leisure Vacations offers. And therefore, as part of that arrangement, I can't tell people where it is that I was out checking out. So until
that's
after
gotta,
they go.
That's got to be tough, you know? I mean, you go there, you make all the arrangements or whatever, plan out the mystery trip.
And, well, yeah,
and then you got to hold that,
especially because one of these places had some really cool things, and you know you want to come home and drop those things into conversation, but you have to be careful who you're talking to because you might very well be talking to somebody who's going on one of those
trips. Right. Well, when you were a kid, were you good at being able to keep secrets?
Was I? Yeah. It was the people that I told things to that couldn't keep the secrets. I was always really good at keeping the secrets myself. Listen, I haven't been any place I can talk about. So where have you been? I understand you went to one of our guest locations.
Right. We've had the in-town campground folks on just recently.
The glampers.
That's right. And they got the glamping tents. And I finally decided it was time to go camping, or in this case, go glamping. I went with my wife, and my daughter and son-in-law came along. We each had our own separate glamping tent. They provided us with a nice little fire pit that we fired up in the evening, and mm-hmm. we toasted marshmallows. I discovered two things about glamping.
Okay.
And it's sort of glamping camping. Number one, you know, and people that listen to me can probably tell I'm kind of a loud person. Okay. You know, radio people have kind of loud voices.
I see.
It's I don't know if it's the projecting thing that we do, mm-hmm. but when it gets to be about, you know, 10 o'clock at a campground, It's not like, you know, bring out the car and let's sing around. Everybody is friggin' gone to bed. And so we're sitting around, you know, toasting marshmallows, and I'm talking like this, and my daughter and my wife are going, shh, shh, whisper, whisper.
You're putting your outdoor, your indoor voice.
Yeah, indoor voice. Even if I went beyond a whisper just to like this, I was still too loud.
Yeah.
And they actually have guards on the campgrounds that wander around, make sure everybody is safe. And Ken came by and visited with us, and he pointed that out. That after a certain time, you know, we got to kind of keep it down.
So he
noticed. It was difficult. I thought I just might as well go to bed. Because I cannot be quiet.
Stephanie.
Yeah.
Everybody has their cross to bear.
Right.
And hers is the radio announcer that travels with her everywhere he goes.
The loud guy. And then the other thing I want to make sure people understand that may want to do glamping, because it's kind of a luxury version of camping.
Uh-huh.
You've got a solid tent with a hardwood floor, and you got a bed that's on a pedestal, and you got electricity. And in fact, the bed even had a heating pad on it so you could flip it on and warm it up. But one thing, you know, that you want to make sure that you're not misunderstanding is it is still a tent, and it does have little cracks and crevices where creepy crawly things can still get into your tent. So glamping.
So you and Howie Mandel are not exactly 100% down with.
I pull back the covers and check for things. And there was a couple of things and we had to get rid of those.
were they small things?
Yeah, one was small. One was rather large.
Oh, God.
Are you familiar with a cowboy spider?
and the thing is, I'm laughing at you, but I'm only laughing at you because even glamping would be, for me, staying in an inexpensive hotel is practically camping.
That's
roughing it enough. Yeah, you know, I mean, like, I was just in this hotel. New hotels now are one of the millennial things is hardwood floors in hotels. Also, it's easier to keep clean and it's cheaper for maintenance and stuff like that. And so I just happened to be two different, entirely different brands in two entirely different cities. And they both had hardwood floors.
Really? I've never had one of those yet.
So it's weird in the, you know, it's weird in the night.
Yeah, cold on your feet.
It is. When you're not used to that sort of thing, it's just, I don't know. I mean,
you're right, though. It would be a lot easier to keep clean. And if you're someone that wonders if there was something yucky on your carpet before you got there.
Right.
You don't have to worry about that.
Well, but of course, it was something. That's right. Because if it's a floor and it was yucky, they've cleaned it up. It was the carpet. It went into the carpet. And now you're walking on it. And it's so the reality is that the floor is actually better. And that's what I kept telling myself over 5 or 6 days. If we don't get the travel news in here, we're going to run out of time to do it.
Okay. With that being said, at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, ladies and gentlemen, we're bringing you up to date on what's new in the travel news.
Or whenever we get around to it.
I mentioned
in the headlines that the first Krispy Kreme, Tom, opened in Ireland. And so they opened up, and the idea was that this Krispy Kreme was going to be a 24/7 365 sort of affair, and they put it in a shopping mall, and guess what happened?
Well, the shopping mall closed at 10 o'clock, and that was it.
People who lived near the shopping mall kind of hoped that was it. The response was so overwhelming that the traffic jams existed 24 hours a day.
Oh, so they were open 24-hour in the shopping mall.
Noise, and it was Dublin's 20. There was a 24-hour drive-through in Dublin, and so they shut down, they changed the business model of the store so that it's now closed from 10 until 6 in the morning because the area just couldn't handle. I mean, there were complaints from neighbors about
the
noise.
They couldn't get them to use their indoor voice.
They could. Exactly.
Hey, I need a 12-pack of them Krispy Kremes over here.
Exactly. Oh, did you hear the one about the American Airlines CEO who said that the seats with less seat pitch, in other words, less room between the seats, are much more comfortable?
I heard that, and I'm waiting to hear the rest of that, because there's nothing about that makes any sense.
That makes any sense, exactly. He says, Doug Parker is the gentleman's name. He used to be the CEO at U.S. Airways, and now he's at American Airlines. And he told industry insiders that new aircraft cabins with drastically reduced pitch seat configurations are more comfortable than many of the economy class cabins with greater seat pitch in service today. He lamented that if the flying public better understood the concept of seat pitch, passengers might be more aware of how much more comfortable and experienced the tighter seating plans provide.
Seat pitch, is that like, like when you're singing, you're either in tune or you're out of tune?
Well, a seat pitch is actually, if you measure from the front of your seat
yes.
to the front of the next seat, that's the pitch. That's how much space there is.
Right.
And generally, pitch in the old days was 34, 35 inches. Now you pay extra money to get that kind of pitch. Now Southwest is 32. Most airlines are 31. American is cut down to 30 and has three rows on their new planes, apparently, that are going to be, even though they promised this wasn't going to happen,
but how
29
can less,
inches.
How can less leg room actually be more comfortable?
Oh, Tom, how dare you doubt Mr. Parker? I'm sure he knows exactly what he's talking about. In fact, I'm sure he flies in those very small seat pitch, crammed together pieces of human catastrophe on a... I bet you he's never sat in one in his entire life. And he's CEO of the... I bet you. A nickel to a Krispy Kreme donut from Dublin that he's never sat in one of them his whole life. Southwest Airlines Hawaii update is that there's not much update yet on the Southwest flights. We're all waiting. We've got our best scouts on looking at it there. We still expect that Southwest flights may start before the end of November. And you say, well, but we're already in October. How could that possibly be? Well, if you offer seats at whatever price, I mean, there's a point at which people will drop everything and go to Hawaii.
Well, you got a lot of folks here in California.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of them.
That's it.
That has that companion deal that Southwest offered us for 2018.
That's very true.
And we're sitting on them, waiting, hoping that we can activate that before December 31st. So
Southwest says they're still going to do inter-island service, although not at the very beginning. They say that they're not changing their fee structure. They're not going to charge for baggage. The legroom is still going to be the 32 inches that they use on their mainland flights. Yes, they're going to have food, but they haven't all worked that out yet. And the four major California cities are going to be first. And we're watching. I get lots of folks who write to us at travelguysradio.com and ask us all the time if we know when that's going to happen. And so I'm just telling you that that's all that we know for now, but we're watching very carefully. There are some parking lot improvements going on at Sacramento International Airport. The economy lot, which is the cheapest place to park out there, some of it is paved and some of it is unpaved. And in the winter, the portion of the lot that is unpaved can be a little yucky when it rains.
Well, let me tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
During Christmas,
yes.
I parked in that particular lot. And, of course, at Christmas, you can imagine every space was taken
mm-hmm.
except for the one in the really deep puddle. I took it, rolled up my pants, and that's where my car stayed for the week while we were in San Antonio. So if they pave it, the mud puddle parking spot that nobody wants will no longer exist.
Will no longer
just,
be.
So just a warning to...
For those who share that mud puddle spot with you,
yes,
that one could be gone.
So how long is this going to take?
It's going to take a few months. It means that part of the economy lot will be closed on a kind of a rotating basis while they put down new asphalt and paint. So once they complete it, of course, it will be better. During the meantime, there's an overflow lot that they use during the holiday periods, which will be open. I saw that in operation. I came back home yesterday afternoon, so I saw that in operation out there. What this really means is that the lecture we always give you about please go to the airport a little bit earlier than you were thinking of going, just so that you'll allow for that unusual thing that you didn't expect to happen. This is one of those unusual things. You go to the airport, the lot you normally park in is full. The lot you would then park in is also full, so now you have to drive around the terminal two extra times, and it takes an extra 15 minutes, and because you cut it to the bone, you don't have those 15 minutes, and now it's a problem. So this is another reason. There's a little bit of a parking issue, especially if you'd like to park in the cheap lots. You say, well, I park in the garage. This won't affect me, but it might, because some of the people who park in the cheap lot will end up in the garage, and then that they may be, as Tom noted, in your space where the mud puddle is, and then you'll have to find another space. So please do us all a favor. And there's some other stuff, but I'll try to work that in later in the show, because otherwise we'll never get to Christopher Elliott, and that's your travel news for today.
And Chris Elliott joins us next. Make you a smarter traveler and improve your travel literacy. That's next. We're back. It's Mark and Tom, the Travel Guys, and brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And back with us, and live for no less, on a Sunday. My gosh,
how
Chris Elliott's
that?
Life must be in shambles to have extra time to join
for the Travel Guys on Sunday. Chris, welcome. I was just desperately, during that commercial break here on my phone, trying to find the travel section in the newspaper so I could tell people where your travel column is, because it's always in the newspaper in the Sacramento Bee on Sundays, and it's always in the travel section. And of course, as luck would have it, I didn't quite make it in time. But anyways, if you look in the travel section, you'll probably find Mr. Elliott's column. How are you, Christopher?
I am doing great. How about you guys?
I think we're fair to middling, at least. I see that you're considering writing a new book, new travel advocacy book.
Yes, I am. This will be my third book, and I'm still in the very early stage, but it's going to be kind of an autobiographical look at what has happened to customer service in the 30 years since I've started covering consumer advocacy issues, and I'm really, really excited. I think this is going to be great, and we might even be able to, write the narrative that changes the way people are treated, hopefully.
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting that one of the few authors I know that asked the people who already read his writings what should be in the book and what might be some potential topics and things like that. I thought that was kind of an interesting approach on your part. You wrote an article about travel literacy. And because here on this program, one of the things that we kind of try to do is give people some tidbits from time to time that we hope will make them a little bit smarter when they get out on the road. So I thought that your column about travel literacy, and one of the things that you did was, Chris, when you started out, you split travel literacy into two categories. You said most of it falls into understanding how the travel industry works, with often arcane rules and restrictions, and being aware of cultures and customs. And one is easier to overcome and one isn't. Explain to us a little bit about what you consider the two categories of travel literacy.
Yeah, sure. And by the way, the thing you were talking about before, it's called crowdsourcing. I love it. I love asking people what I should write, because they always know. I have no idea what to write sometimes. But on this particular one, that column just wrote itself. And I'll tell you why. This is the time when, all our summer vacations are over, and we're thinking about our winter holiday vacations, spring break, maybe even looking forward to next summer. And so we're wondering how maybe we can prevent some of the mistakes happen over the summer. And you're absolutely right. There are two different types of literacy. The easy stuff is figuring out these rules, because there really aren't that many to learn. And you can always read the terms and conditions. I know that I sound like a broken record, because I've been on your show before and I've said this before. But really, taking the time to understand the travel product, knowing that if you buy an airline ticket now, it doesn't come with everything. It doesn't come, for example, with your ability to make a seat reservation usually, or even in some cases, the ability to take a bag on the plane with you, not just to check a bag, but to take one with you. That kind of thing can be fixed pretty easily. The other stuff that I talk about in this column, which is cultural, understanding culture, understanding the dangers that might await you at a destination, maybe even just understanding the country itself that you're visiting, if you're visiting a different country, all that takes time, that takes a lot of effort. And so I spend a lot of time in my column in the Washington Post talking about that.
Perhaps one of the reasons that the late Anthony Bourdain's show was so popular, because of the fact that he kind of showed people what it was like to sit down and break bread with somebody locally, which I think ultimately is people's goals when they're traveling. Tom, you had a thought about the literacy here to ask Chris about.
I did, Chris. Based on your research so far and your crowdsourcing, what is it do you feel that travelers are most illiterate about?
Well, because I do the advocacy part, I find that people don't take the time to really read what they're buying. So they have no idea. I mean, I just had a case where someone didn't bother to even ask her travel agent for the itinerary and didn't look up the itinerary until months later, only to realize that she was flying out on the wrong day and it was just a real mess. So as far as I'm concerned, if people read the terms and conditions, that would be the number one mistake that people make. The rest takes time. You know, like I said, I lived in Europe for 16 years, and I saw people who would come over to Europe, and they would it would take them literally years before they fully understood. And I would use that term kind of with reservations, because people don't ever really fully understand any culture. But it would take them a long time before they really grasp, you know, what people meant when they said a certain thing, that kind of thing. So that can take a while.
And Chris, if somebody is getting ready to travel to a foreign country they've never been to before, a particular source that you would suggest?
Oh, wow. There's we're talking about language. Duolingo is a really great program that lets you learn a language, just the basics. I think that's really important, to know how to say yes, no, and where's the bathroom in another language. State Department advisory website, really important. You know, they have levels from 1 to 4, 1 being safe to travel, 4 no go. And it's real important if you're concerned about safety, which you should be, is going to the State Department website and looking all that up. Also, some visa requirements are on that site. Passport requirements, you need to know those before you're leaving the country. All those things are really key, because you know, we as Americans tend to take a lot of things for granted, and you know, one of the things is safety. You can't take that for granted when you're going overseas.
Chris, thank you very much for your insights today. We're up against the clock. Appreciate you taking some time to join us on a Sunday. Christopher Elliott, you can find him at elliott.org. You can also find him in the travel on the travel page of the Sunday Sacramento Bee. We'll be back after the news talking mushrooms with you in Mendocino County on the Travel Guys.
Welcome, everyone. You have the Travel and Entertainment Guys on KFBK every Sunday, 3 o'clock. By the way, you can follow along with pretty much everything at TravelGuysRadio.com. Links to our guests are there, including a link to the Mendocino County Mushroom Wine and Beer Festival.
Yep.
And our special guest on the line is not on the line. He hasn't called yet.
He hasn't.
If he's listening to us in Mendocino,
yeah,
you need to call.
You think so?
You think so?
Yeah. These things happen when you have live radio.
It's winter rains, Mark, that you generally signal the beginning of the North Coast's astonishing mushroom season.
Are you reading off of the press release?
No. This is just stuff I know. Mendocino region, you know, it's literally home to like three. Did you know there are 3,000 varieties, and many of them are edible?
Why are we waiting for this gentleman Travis Scott to call when you apparently know all?
You know,
there's
the rare candy, the candy cap mushroom. It's intense, got an intense maple flavor.
Uh huh.
And a really sweet fragrance. Do you like mushrooms?
Is that incriminating?
No.
You're talking about
not those kind of mushrooms. I don't know if people still do that anymore.
I don't know if they do.
That's of course most people's biggest fear.
It's back
is
from my childhood.
Is that either it's going to be psychedelic or it could be poisonous? You just don't randomly go pick out mushrooms in the yard.
I get mine at Raley's in Bel Air, so I feel fairly safe.
I want you to say the line that you enjoyed saying the most at the beginning of the tease there.
Okay. Oh, the one about shrooms, about...
The fungus.
The fungus among... There's a fungus among us.
Yeah. Anyway.
They're having a mushroom festival.
Yes.
Up in Mendocino County.
They have themed dinners.
It's the first time that they've done this. They're having like 50 different mush... And it's over 2 weekends. It's November 2nd through the 11th. So they're basically, they've never done this before. Good idea. They've got all kinds of stuff. Yes, you were about to say.
They have, and it's not just about eating mushrooms. They actually have guided mushroom foraging. That's what you call when you go out and you You dig up mushrooms.
I
and
assume
you find
people
them.
Who will tell you which mushrooms are
absolutely
going to kill you and which ones are not.
And themed rides on the skunk train right out of Fort Bragg in Willits.
Well, and here's a Little River Inn annual mushroom and Belgian beer dinner. The beleaguered pig and Pegasus Farms. The pig teams up with Pegasus Farms and other foragers and local winemakers for a fermented, foraged, and fungi five-course repast.
There you go. You know, I only know how to cook one way, sautéed mushrooms. That's pretty much it, and throw it on my steak or whatever. And when you go to the mushroom festival, you can take some cooking classes. And they have music and exhibits. And
if you are somebody who is interested in the fungus festival, the fungus among us festival in Mendocino, it's two weekends long in early November. You could go to travelguysradio.com. There would be a link there to all of these. They've got over 50 different events, and it looks like a lot of them are foodie oriented. So if you are a foodie person who enjoys mushrooms, then this is probably about as close to your thing as you're going to get. Besides that, what are you going to be doing the first two weekends of November? I will suggest you this is a perfect time for a mushroom festival because there's nobody else has anything to do.
I like mushrooms that are stuffed with stuff and then baked, like, you know, crab or shrimp. It's very good that way.
I have a couple of news items here since our fungus guy didn't call in or has not reached us yet. I'm looking over there and Luis is shaking his head. So listen.
But he does that quite frequently.
He's been the board operator for the Travel Guys for a number of years, and that would cause just about any sane person to shake their head, I'm sure, on occasion.
And they just a twitch.
He didn't have that twitch, I don't think, before he started the Travel Guys thing. Yeah. We talked in the headlines about Marriott hotels. This is kind of important because if you're a road warrior like myself and you're out on the road a lot, you may find yourself in Marriott hotels, and they've been having some kind of wildcat strikes. They had a hotel worker strikes at 26 properties in Chicago, Marriott, Hilton, and Hyatt properties. In Boston, 1,500 Marriott workers walked off the jobs at 7 properties all the way up to Ritz-Carlton. So it included housekeepers, bellmen, bartenders, and others. I'm going to suggest to you that without housekeepers, things deteriorate at hotels really quickly. So management people are not, we're not good housekeepers to start with, and they don't make good replacement housekeepers. So when you see a hotel that's having a housekeeping strike, you can bet that within 2 or 3 days, things in the hotel that get done on a regular basis are not going to get done. You probably don't want to be there.
Would you recommend that if you're staying, and you can mention particular properties if you want, Marriott, for example, would this be a time where you might want to ask when you're getting ready to, you know, book a stay, whether there is a pending strike or something going on?
Well, yeah, if you can ask Marriott people, and I've found in the past that Marriott folks are pretty good folks in terms of being honest with people. I think they would be likely to tell you they don't want their guests coming. But also, if these things are kind of random and kind of wildcat, they may not always know when they're happening or how long they're going to be, kind of like the air traffic controller strikes in Europe, where they just kind of pop up out of nowhere. So it's just something to kind of be aware of. If you have a meeting or you're going, like I'm going to a convention in Milwaukee in about 6 weeks, staying at a Marriott hotel for 5 nights. So, you know, it gets to be a week out. I'm probably going to be on the phone to that hotel. I'm probably going to look at their Facebook page and their Yelp page and just see if there's, have there been any problems, any picketers or anything like that. It's just, you know, I have a tendency to be a person who kind of tends to, doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to head it off, but you might, if you all saw that the hotel was already a target of a problem, then that might be your clue to go find someplace else to stay or, you know, change your trip to another time. Or,
well, being a tour director for many, many years, you know, you book a lot of stays. Have you and your travelers ever, you know, either been alerted in advance of somebody give you a warning that, gee, we see you're coming and you're bringing a, you know, 30 people or whatever, and we were having a strike. Have you ever run across that and to disrupt any of your trips?
You run across it sometimes, but people hotels aren't really upfront about telling you about it. They will give you these kind of encrypted messages that that hypothetically will let them off the hook for telling you something was up and you should have said something, but is worded in such a way that you won't say anything, that you won't become alarmed.
Got it.
So you really have to be careful. We seem to be through it now, but for a while we had a situation where hotels business has been so good for so long that many of them were due for renovations, you know, just replacements of things like mattresses and carpets and things like that that were dirty and needed to be replaced, but couldn't be replaced because business was so good they didn't want to shut down part of the hotel
right.
in order to do it. And so eventually, after the stuff set in storage for a year, year and a half, I mean, I know hotels where this happened, they, you know, it was costing them more money to store the stuff than it would be to replace it. So finally they had to shut down some rooms in the hotel. So that was a little bit of a problem for a while. You were seeing hotels that, you know, they were just shutting down for renovations because the renovations were way past due. That we seemed to kind of sort of be past that now.
With that in mind, and you mentioned about, you know, shutting down for repairs and so forth, I've had a couple of situations where I booked a resort stays. One was with Diamond International and in Florida. And some weeks before the trip, I get an email that says, oh, by the way, we want to let you know there's some construction going on mm-hmm. at our resort. There will be some areas, and the lobby has been moved to another location, and the golf course is now closed. Now, there are other golf courses nearby, but this happened to be a resort where it's on a golf course. And so with that being said, what suggestions would you have to travelers that may get those emails or calls in regards to, you know, construction going on, things changing you've already made the reservations?
I'm not a huge fan of TripAdvisor and Yelp and stuff like that for reviews. I think that there's a lot of room there, and it's been proven that not all those reviews are written by honest people, that some of them are staged and rigged, and competition is writing bad reviews about other people. But in this situation, those can be invaluable because you can go there and you can see what are people talking about who have stayed in the hotel recently. Are they talking about problems with the renovations? And because these are things that people will talk about on those, sometimes even unfairly, they will talk about them, but they definitely will talk about them. So that's a good place to go. If you're notified that your hotel has some issues, then you want to go someplace where some neutral pictures might be posted. And if you have any suspicions at all, you want to call the hotel and you want to ask some solid questions, or better yet, get an administrative email and send some questions so they'll have to answer them in writing. So they will have to tell you, you know, yes, we had a hotel last January in San Jose that we were using an Embassy Suites hotel for a figure skating event down there.
Mm-hmm.
That the group got down there and the tour director called in and said there is a tractor parked in the lobby of the hotel. That's how much of rent under renovation it is. There is a full-size tractor in the lobby of the hotel. He said that is representative of how much chaos is going on here. So I said, well, you know, immediately take pictures. I mean, if you get into a situation like that where you got in, and especially if the hotel kind of sort of warned you, but the warning didn't fit the crime, then that's where you really want to take pictures. And you want to be reasonable about it. You want to say to the hotel, look, you know, fix this. Walk me to someplace else. Give me a refund. Somehow make this right. But if they're not willing to do that, then you've got, you know, pictures, and you can at least warn other travelers about coming there and getting themselves into trouble.
We are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Again, at travelguysradio.com. Not only the stuff that we discuss on the program and links to our guests, but a lot of other cool stuff is available for you to poke around.
We put cool stuff up there, like the best pizza place in every state. If you go to travelguysradio.com, you can see a list of the best pizza place in every state. The one in California is a place in North Beach. And I'm forgetting now what it was, but I looked when I posted this. But anyway, there are things like that that you can find at travelguysradio.com. Tom, this is something that I saw. Is it rude to tip a non-round number? Were you ever a server?
No.
No? So you're not the... I wonder, Luis, were you ever... Luis, were you a server?
A non-round number.
Yes, I worked in the restaurant industry for a while.
Okay, so is it... This is a guy is asking. He said he went to a restaurant. He tipped a non-round number, which he said was about 19%. I mean, he tipped a round number. He tipped $6.49 to bring the bill to an even number for his credit card purposes. And the waiter kind of gave him some grief about that. And we're all trying to figure out why that would be.
No idea. I can understand if it was change and you didn't want to, you know, carry the change around because it would all add up at the end of a shift. But if it's on the credit card, I couldn't see why that would bother anybody.
Yeah, I would say it would seem like that having, you know,
I
any
think
kind
the same
of,
thing.
Because the guy said, well, I could have left just $6 instead of $6.49, and that would have, you know, been a more round number anyway.
49 pennies.
If you're a server or something like that, and you know why people shouldn't leave rounded tips. 921-1530 is the number here, and you could call us and tell us, and maybe we would even put that on the air. When we come back, we are going to talk about rules for the road, but not just rules for any time on the road, rules for the road for 1914.
Let's go back 100 years
to ride,
in the travel guy's time machine.
And to ride the Lincoln Highway across the country, rules for traveling across the country in 1914, next on The Travel Guys.
Welcome. Here we are again. It's Mark and Tom. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. You can join us every Sunday, 3 to 4 o'clock for this little program. And if you happen to miss one or you'd like to go back and review something that we talked about on one of our shows, you can find our podcasts at TravelGuysRadio.com or simply go to your iHeartRadio app, and where they have podcasts, just Google Travel or Travel Guys, and you'll find them there as well.
You're just a glutton for punishment. You can listen to the Travel Guys twice a week.
Lucky you. I do quite often.
Really?
No.
No, you don't. I listen to us in while we're on the air, actually. I listen to our voice. Never mind.
I would like to say that that's true, but clearly by... You know,
obviously
some of the content and activities that go
people.
On to the show, we're not paying a lot of attention to.
I've been listening to the baseball playoffs because I stumbled on to, of course, we don't mention the Giants because they're not part of the playoff system this year. And one of the teams that is a team that we don't like to talk about much. I stumbled on the Milwaukee Brewers radio broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And the great thing about it was the Brewers baseball radio announcer is Bob Uecker. Now, if you're an old baseball movie guy, you know there was a baseball movie called Major League Baseball, Major League, many years ago. And Uecker was the announcer.
Yes, sir.
And he's known for these Bob Uecker seats, these seats that are in the upper reaches of the stadium. So anytime you're in a stadium, a baseball stadium, and you're far away from the action, the seats are known as Bob Uecker seats. Anyway, Bob must be 150 years old, and he's still the broadcaster for the Milwaukee Brewers. And he's the biggest homer on the planet. And it's fun to listen to him.
That's
and, of course,
good.
the Brewers are doing well. So I don't know what this has to do with the travel show, but anyway, I just
digressed
there slightly.
There you go. And now that you're digressing, let's digress back 100 years. It's 1914, and it's time to hit the road on the infamous Lincoln Highway between Chicago, the New York, back to the West Coast.
Yeah, all the way from Times Square to San Francisco.
So what kind of tips and trouble can we get into?
Well, know that about 35 miles an hour was the fastest you could go. That was considered to be pretty much breakneck speed if you had flat land where you could see directly ahead of you and there was enough room for somebody to pass you, and all those stretches were not very common. Lincoln Highway crossed 14 states, 128 counties, went through 500 cities. It was originally 3,388 miles long. Although over time, they reduced that by about 250 miles by making the route more direct. Now, Route 66 is about 2,400 miles from Chicago to Los Angeles. So this ended up being 3,100 miles, basically, from New York to San Francisco. And back then, in 1914, approximately 150 vehicles made the transcontinental trip all the way across the country. 150.
How many tires would
so
they
about
have,
as
extra
many,
tires would
about
they have
as
to
probably
take?
Many who get on the bridge and going into New York City in probably 4 minutes. you know, on an average day now. Well, and listen, here's if you wanted to go one travel Lincoln Highway from New York to San Francisco, it would only cost you, with three friends, would only cost you, covering 3,400 miles, $240. It didn't, however, include, that included everything except tires and repairs.
I understand, from what I've read, there was a lot of that.
Yeah, a lot of it. Best part about it, it said in the advertisements, it would only take 19 days, driving approximately 10 hours a day, averaging 18 miles an hour. And in the ads, they said, now compare that to a wagon train. Here's some tips, though, some ideas for if you were driving, maybe some of these might still be valid today. Over 100 miles, 100 years later. Don't wait until the gasoline is almost gone before looking for more. Don't allow the water can to be anything but full. Very important things. Don't allow the car to be without food at any time. Now, that's different from gasoline. This is people food. Traveling can make one hungry. So you don't want to be without food because cars were not that dependable. Your car could break down. You have no food. Then now you got no way to eat.
Okay.
So that becomes very important. Don't fail to have warm clothing. If you need to know why, just see all of the above things. Don't carry loaded firearms. That's what it says.
Okay.
Don't fail to put out your campfire. Don't forget the yellow goggles. I'm not sure why yellow was important.
Maybe that was to help you see better at night. I don't know.
I don't know. We don't forget the camphor ice.
The what?
Camphor ice. C-A-M-P-H-O-R.
Is that something like you put on
that's
sore
what I'm
armor
guessing.
Camphor?
Like, yeah. Maybe like for sunburn or something like that? Don't ford water without first wading through it. You'll dry off soon enough. So don't take, you know how they say these days, you know, don't take a chance, take your
right.
vehicle into water. Well, back then it was, you know, don't ford into water, go into it. Don't drive more than 25 miles an hour. Things will break. Don't carry your good clothes. Ship them ahead.
This is great stuff.
Isn't this great stuff? Don't wear leather puttees, P-U-T-T-E-E-S. I don't know what that is. Use canvas. Don't drink alkali water, much of the water found alongside of the road. Don't wear new shoes. And then there's unlisted, there is more advice. Hunger and thirst are not pleasant companions. Neither can a man work if he is half starved and his mouth dry from dust and lack of water. Be sure to wear heavy socks in your sleeping bags. Mud holes are not uncommon on the Lincoln Highway, so extracting yourself is an important skill. Now, this is really important to know. If you're stuck on the highway in 1914, and this happened a lot, especially in the middle part of the country, dig a hole in front of the automobile into which the front tires can go. Now, you're stuck in the mud. Picture this.
Mm-hmm.
So you're digging a hole in front of the front tires, someplace for them to go. Put sagebrush in front of the rear wheels.
Got it.
Okay. As the car moves, block the rear wheels so the car cannot go backwards. Dig a new hole in front and continue until you're free.
Wow, what a great idea. I'd give that a try.
If you didn't get all those and you want to look at them, they're at travelguysradio.com. Time for us to go. We will be back again next weekend.
Thank you, Mark. Remember,
dance like nobody's watching.
Stay well, my friends. We'll see you next time.